I wanted to start off our time really with no introduction, no context to what I'm about to show you. It's a video that Jared's going to play, so I'm just going to invite him to play that right now.
What's your deal, man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby.
Whoa.
Use Snickers. Better?
Better.
Hey!
I'm up it!
That hurt.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfied.
Did I really just play a Snickers commercial at church? Yes. Yes. If this is your first time here at church, if this is your first time at any church, it's okay. Don't be scared. Just as a little side note here, it's okay to have fun at church. It's okay to laugh. So hopefully that brought a laugh to you this morning. But, you know, like I said, I haven't been here in 4 weeks. So welcome back, right, Nick? That's what you planned while you were gone, that, you know, a Snickers commercial? It ties together, trust me. But what you just saw in that commercial, what you just saw, the message behind that commercial is found everywhere. It's found in everything in life, I believe. Because we all, what that commercial, the premise of that commercial says this, that we all have this desire, we all have this hunger to be satisfied. That we are going through life trying to satisfy this desire and hunger that we have. And really what I believe in, for all people in life, that desire that we have, that hunger that we have is to be ourselves, like that commercial said. You're not you when you're hungry. And so we have this, people go through life trying to be what they're trying to figure out is you, themselves. Or we might say to be the very best version of ourselves. We try to go through life trying to find out what that is. People's desire in life is to have the best version of life, isn't it? Just the very best life possible. And deep down, I believe that that is a fundamental truth of all people everywhere, is that we want to live this life, and we want it to be a good life, don't we? Don't we? So then, when we go through that life with that desire and that hunger, we live this way, saying, how can I satisfy that? How can I be fulfilled in my life? Now, that Snickers commercial will make that pitch to you that, what do you need to have that? A Snickers bar, right? Snickers satisfies, they said. Now, I like Snickers as much as the next person, but how long does a Snickers satisfy? Briefly. I mean, you might have a king size, that'll last you a little longer. But briefly, for a moment, will a Snickers satisfy? And we do this with so many other things besides Snickers in life. We see these things all around us, we say, oh, not even that we're saying it, but that these things in our life are saying it to us. You need this to be satisfied. You need this to be fulfilled in life. And what we do is say, yeah, I do need that. And we try it, and for a moment, we are satisfied. For a moment, we are fulfilled, and then on to the next thing. I need this, or I need that. We're hoping for satisfaction and fulfillment, not only for ourselves, but for our life in general. See, and here's the truth behind all that. There's a fundamental truth to that we were all created. We were created by God with that desire. We were created by God with this desire to be fulfilled in life, right? It's okay. It's not a wrong thing. We were created. God gave us this desire to be fulfilled, but here's the difference. The only way that we can truly be fulfilled is to be who God created us to be, right? When God, just think about it. God who created us, it makes sense that he created us with this desire to be fulfilled. And where are we going to find that fulfillment? In him. He's not going to create us to be fulfilled in anything or anyone besides himself. This is the way that we can be fulfilled in life, is to be who he created us to be. And who did he create us to be? Like him. He created us to be like him, like Jesus. So when you are being and becoming like God, when you're being and becoming like Jesus, through the Holy Spirit dwelling in us, like, you know, Pentecost makes possible, when you are being and becoming like Jesus is when you will experience the fulfillment that you were created to have. So from here we ask, you know, we're tracking along this thought, aren't we? okay, we have this desire God created us with, this desire to be fulfilled, to be satisfied. So then, we're following along here. Okay, we know that fulfillment and satisfaction comes when we are being and becoming like Him. So then our question becomes, so what is God like? If we are to be like Him, we ask ourselves, what is God like? What are the characteristics of God? Anybody? What are some of the characteristics of God that you've come to know Him as through His scripture and through His revelation? What is God like? God is love. Okay, God's a warrior. That's not one you often hear. What else? His characteristic, He is kind and good. These are characteristics of God. This is who God is. God is all of these different things, and we could take this sermon series in many different ways if we focus right on that, right? The characteristics of God. But the series is called what? The Generous Life. God is a generous God. This is a characteristic of God that you might not often hear about, is it? Now, you'll hear it, but in a roundabout way, because God is generous. That is a quality and characteristic of who He is. But then we often funnel that into, okay, other outlets. God is generous with His love, like we were just saying, His kindness and goodness. But all of these things are who God is. He is a generous God. And what does it mean to be generous? Have you ever thought about that? Give more than you get. You're on the right track. Google helps too. So, I mean, this, I always tell you this. About Google? Yeah. There you go. I'm not surprised one bit. But to be generous is this. Now, I adapted this a little bit and added some to it, but in general, this is what it means to be generous. To be generous means to give more than is necessary or is expected. To be generous is to give more than is necessary or that is expected. God is generous with His love. He gives more than is necessary or even expected with His love. He is generous with His mercy. He is generous with His grace. He is generous with His forgiveness. He always gives more than is expected or even necessary. And the part I added, or is even thought possible. Because ultimately, what is the ultimate sign of God's generosity? What did He give in a way that was more than expected or necessary and even thought possible? Himself, His Son Jesus. God is a generous God, and because God is generous, we are called to be like Him, to be generous like He is generous. So this series, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how do we do this? How do we live this generous life, and not only for us, but what it means for the rest of the world, how it impacts others. So as we're continuing on, I know this is going to be a 3-week series, starting today. And you might be thinking, okay, generosity, what does your mind automatically go to? It's okay. Money, yes. That's when we hear to be generous, we automatically associate that with money. But I'm going to just give you a sigh of relief. We're not going to talk about money for 3 weeks. We're not going to talk about it very much at all, to be honest. Because generosity is not limited to money. It is included, but it is not limited to money. Generosity is expressed in many different ways. We just talked about the ways God expresses His generosity with His love, His grace, His mercy, His kindness, goodness, faithfulness, with His warriorness. I just made that word up. But God is gracious and generous in so many different ways. So how can we be generous? What are the ways that we can be generous outside of this money? I'm gonna try to break that thought of ours, because we are called to this life of generosity that is much bigger than money. How can we be generous? We can be generous with the stuff that we have. Sure. We can be generous with our words. There's a proverb in Proverbs 16 that says this in verse 23. Proverbs 16, verse 23 and 24. From a wise mind comes wise speech. The words of the wise are persuasive. Kind words are like honey, sweet to the soul and healthy for the body. Are your words bringing health and goodness and sweetness to the, not just to you, but to those around you? We can be generous with our words. We can give more than is expected or necessary or even thought possible with our words, the words that we say to people, those around us. We can be generous. This is a big one. We can be generous with our time and attention. In the world that we live in today, I think this would speak volumes to people if we were generous with our time and attention, because the world that we live in is what? It's busy. The world that we live in has full of distractions. Now, I've always said this. There's always been busyness and distractions in life. That's not a today thing, okay? In biblical times, there was busyness and distractions, you know. But the difference in what I see is that we carry the busyness and distractions in our back pocket, okay? They didn't do that in the Bible times. We carry around the distractions. And I'm going to challenge you this week to pay special attention, pay specific attention to when you go out in public and, you know, if you go to a restaurant or, you know, even at your own homes with your families, how much time is spent on here? Now, that I'm preaching to myself on this. Because it's so easy to go into this world and to check out from those around us, to live this life of, I've told this before, but I'm not even sure if it's a real word or phrase, but it was one that my professor introduced me to years ago at Mount Vernon, the distance preferencing. Is that when we are all on our phones or just distracted, what we're doing is preferring to be with those at a distance. We're distancing ourselves from those around us. And that's what the world we live in today, isn't it? We carry these distractions around in our pocket. They're all around us. But what would it look like? You know, we're going to have a spiritual imagination of what it would look like. What would life look like to be generous with our time and attention with those around us? I believe it would make a huge impact in the world. There was something that I used to do with my college roommates at Mount Vernon, because there was one day where I just had enough, where we'd go to the cafeteria. We'd all go and eat together. It was one of my favorite times. But what would happen in that circle table, there'd be six of us and maybe some, even a couple of the guys' girlfriends around that table. And what I saw one day looking around was just this. Everyone was looking down at their phone. I was like, come on, this is ridiculous. So I started, you know, I was the dad of the apartment, so I said, phones in the middle, we're going to just chat and be present with each other. What would life look like if that's what we live like? You know, wherever we go, our homes, you know, that's probably the most common place, but with our family, with those around us, to pay special attention and to offer our time in generous ways. See, hopefully what I'm challenge you and encouraging you to do is to expand your view of generosity. It's not just a money thing. It's all of who we are, isn't it? It's every day in every way we can have and have. There are opportunities to be generous. It's giving of ourselves to be used by God for God's glory and impacting the world for God's purposes. Giving ourselves for God's purposes and His glory in this world. So you don't have to be rich. You don't have to be a millionaire to be a generous person. I know some of you are like, oh man, you know, you don't have an excuse. Generosity is for everyone, and here's how to do that. I want to help us this morning, how to live a generous life. Two steps. Number one, identify an opportunity to be generous. Identify an opportunity to be generous. Number two, take action in that opportunity. Simple as that, right? You know, we could go home right now, couldn't we? We're going to unpack it a little bit, but those two things, if you identify the opportunity before you and then you take action, you will live a generous life, and the world around you will be impacted for God's purposes. I guarantee you, not only will other people be changed, but you yourself will be changed by living this way. You will make an impact in the world. These ideas, you know, we're going to talk about, like I said, in the coming weeks, but today we're going to focus in on a part that's included in the identifying an opportunity. What do you need if you are trying to identify an opportunity? You need, there's a word that you saw up on the screen. You need awareness. You need to be aware of those around you. You need to be aware of the situations you're in and others are in to identify those opportunities to be generous. Awareness. Here's a little experiment. You know, you might think, well, I think I'm a pretty aware. I think that's one of the most underrated qualities, characteristics that we could have is our awareness. Not only of ourselves, but just around us. Because I think just all the times we're not very aware of you know, the situations that we're in, of how we're coming across, you know. So we need to have this awareness. And here's how to, just a little experiment of how to test your awareness. I want you to think about, before you came here, who were the last 10 people that you saw before you came here? So don't look around, you know, like, oh, okay, 10. Before you came here, who were, and this could be yesterday and previous days. How about this? I'll lower the number. How about the last 5 people that you talked to before here? Think, well, what benefit does this do? Because there are opportunities that we just kind of robot through, that we just go through the motions, that we, that very well could be opportunities to take an action that we're just, you know, that are just passing right by us. So I want to look at this story. There's a story in Scripture that is all about the master of awareness. Okay. Spoiler, there's really no surprise. The master of awareness is who? Jesus. Jesus is the master of awareness and aware of himself and the situation he's in and the people around him. And this story is found in Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. I'm just going to read this entire story here for us. Verse 21 says, Jesus got into the boat again and went back to the other side of the lake, where a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Then a leader of the local synagogue, whose name was Jairus, arrived. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. My little daughter is dying, he said. Please come and lay your hands on her. Heal her so she can live. Jesus went with him, and all of the people crowding around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years, she had spent everything she had to pay them. But she had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe. For she thought to herself, if I can just touch his robe, I will be healed. Immediately, the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Jesus realized at once that the healing power had gone out from him, so he turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my robe? His disciples said to him, look at this crowd pressing around you. How can you ask, who touched me? But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, came and fell to her knees in front of him and told him what she had done. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over. So let's take a minute here and unpack this story just a little bit. This story takes place right after Jesus was on the other side of the lake. You know, he crosses the lake, so therefore he was on the other side of the lake. And what he was doing there was healing a man who was demon-possessed. Fascinating story. I encourage you to read it to get the full context. But there he spent that day with that man who was possessed by demons, and he's crossing this lake with his disciples only to see and to be met by a large crowd. And I was thinking about this, how funny that is. It's like you spend all day traveling, you spend all day working, and then you come back, and what do you see? Another group of people. That's like, okay, and that's not exactly what you want to come back to, but that's what Jesus and his disciples did. They see this crowd on the shore just gathering and crowding around, and there's a man in that crowd who comes forward by the man named Jairus. He's a local synagogue leader. He's a religious leader who has a lot of influence. He comes forward to Jesus, and he's been hearing these rumors. He says, Jesus, will you come with me? My daughter is sick, so sick that she's about to die, actually. And Jesus, what does he do? Okay, goes with him. He does the Jesus thing and goes with him. He stopped what he was doing and went with Jairus. And so far, you know, this part of the story, this first half, because there's different acts of this story. There's this first act with Jairus, and then there's an interruption that takes place in between. But here in this first act, what do we see? We see something pretty obvious, right? Jesus is met with this person who has this need. He's met by this person who presents this urgent request, this very obvious request, this very obvious opportunity to be generous, to take action. And what does Jesus do? He takes action. So, you know, I'm thinking about this. Okay, I thought Jesus was the master of awareness. But to be honest, this part, you don't need a lot of awareness when you're presented with this kind of request and this kind of information. Jesus knew there was a need, and so he goes. But then there's an interruption that takes place that really stands out. While traveling with Jairus, his disciples, and all the crowd of people that were there that day, something happened, something that was not so obvious, something that was not so in your face, something very subtle, something very small, perhaps. There was a woman in that crowd who was there that day who had been bleeding for 12 years. She had seen all the doctors. They couldn't help her. She had spent all of her money on those doctors. So she was sick, broke, and not even that. It says that she had actually gotten worse. So that's a good investment, right? You know, you spend all that money only to be worse off than you were. So she's desperate. You can just, when you're reading the story, you can just hear the desperation come through the words. And even at that time, you know, she was a woman. This is all this cultural stuff was involved too. She was a woman. She was sick. She was bleeding. And, you know, for the Jews, that was a person you did not want to be around. You did not want to associate with. You were outcast. You know, they had all these rules in place for a person like her. So it's very interesting that we see that that's who the main character is, or, you know, besides Jesus. That this woman, in her desperation, says, she sees Jesus. You know, what I picture in this, you know, it might be hard for us to picture crowds. You know, we haven't seen crowds in quite a while, right? But just think about the crowded places, you know, that we go to. Like, the first image that comes to my mind when I read this story, you know, my studies said it was like there was like the marketplace and all the people were crowding. That's how it was. But I think, okay, maybe it was comparable to like what we would think of for like Black Friday, you know, all those crowds of people, you know, there was a lot of people, okay, following Jesus and crowding around him and his disciples. But there in that crowd was this woman, says, I see Jesus, and if I can just touch his robe, I know he can do something. So that's what she does. She reaches out and she touches his robe, not even his body. And instantly she says, I knew my body was healed. But at the same time, at the same instance, Jesus knows that something has happened. Jesus knows that there was something that went out from him and did something miraculous from him. So he turns and asks his disciples, who was it that just touched me? And the disciples, you know, will respond like any of us would. Right, when you see all this crowd of people, you're getting touched by everyone. There's no distinguishing, oh yeah, this person, it was her or it was him. Jesus, we're all touching everybody here. And that's what they say. How can you ask that? But the disciples, they had no clue. The awareness that Jesus had was so completely different than the disciples, because the disciples had no clue that they were right in the midst of an opportunity. They were right in the midst of this opportunity. But Jesus, the master of awareness, knows exactly what's going on. He knows who's around him. He knows who touches not even him, but he knows who touched his robe. So our question then, if we are to be like God, who is generous, we are to be like Jesus, how do we do that? How do we have this kind of awareness in life? How do we do that? Ready? Try harder. I'm kidding. That's not the answer. Relax. It's not just try harder in life to be more aware. Thank goodness it's not that. But I want to offer an answer to that question of how do we do that? How do we be like Jesus? How do we be generous like Jesus? I want to kind of just make sure we're all on the same page, make sure we're all tracking together. God has called us. He has created us to live how? To live generously, to live this life of giving of ourselves, of who we are, more than is necessary, giving more than is expected, giving more than is even thought possible. Living generously, then, when we do this and live this way, will make an impact in the world. It will. It will impact you. It will impact others around you. And when we make this impact, to make this impact, we need to take action. And to take action, what do we need to do? We need to be aware of those opportunities. An awareness, therefore, if we're tracking all of this thought, what does it start with? It starts with awareness. Awareness is what activates generosity. Awareness is what activates generosity for us. We have to learn to live each and every day with this spiritual awareness, with these spiritual antennas that are up, and just always knowing who's around us and the situations that we are in and others are in. And just think about what Jesus, the context for Jesus that day. He was tired. He had worked all day. He was busy. He was in an urgent, he was doing something very important, in the middle of doing something very important, wasn't he? So I know our lives can be busy, and I know we might be doing important, urgent things. But Jesus here in this story challenges us and invites us to live this life where we have even more awareness. So then back to this question, okay, how do we do that? How do we do that? And I jokingly said try harder, because what I believe and what I want to suggest to you is how do we do that is the complete opposite of trying harder. If we try harder, you know, that's what the people of Israel did when they tried harder to follow the law. What did they do? Fail miserably. We cannot try harder to be who God created us to be. God has to do something in us. God has to empower us to live how he's called us and created us to live. So how do we do that? I want to suggest this challenge to you. I want to suggest a prayer that you can pray. This prayer, I believe, will absolutely change your life. Now, some of you are like, oh, I kind of like my life. I don't want to change. God's in the life-changing business to make us more like him. And none of us here are how, we are not final products, any of us. We are always being and becoming more like him. To be generous as God is generous means, obviously, that we need God. That we need God. Listen to what Paul writes in Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Verse 2, it says this: don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. See, Paul right here is inviting us to do what? To let God transform us by changing the way that we think. When you pray for God, when you ask God, every morning, this is the prayer I want to invite you to pray. God, make me more generous. Make me generous like you are generous. That's it. That's the prayer that I'm inviting you and challenging you to pray. And when you pray for God to do this, to make you more generous, what will happen is God will begin to transform you from the inside. And where does that start? Right here. Right here. When you pray that prayer, what is taking place is God is renewing your mind into a new person, and to have new thoughts, and to have new perspective, and to have new awareness of you and those around you. You will start to see people and situations differently. God will reveal opportunities that you might have previously missed. And as you pray and truly seek him, he will send, and his will, and spend time with him, you will. It's such an obvious thing, but what happens when you talk and spend time with a person? You get to know that person. It's the same thing with God. When we spend time with him and pray to him, we get to know the very heart of God, prayer begins to align our hearts and our minds with God's heart and mind. And our thoughts and our heart and our mind begin to be transformed so that we can live what I would call a life of supernatural generosity, because it's not anything that we can just try harder at. With this supernatural generosity that comes from supernatural awareness that only comes from the Holy Spirit of God. Awareness always begins, keep following this track that we're following here, awareness then always begins where? With a transformed mind. With a transformed mind. You cannot live the generous life God has called you and created you to live if you are still thinking with your old, untransformed life or mind. Okay? Let me say that again. You cannot live the generous life that God has created you to live if you are still thinking with your old, untransformed mind. You need a new one. You need a new, transformed mind. I just had this thought this morning when I was back there preparing. That God will change. God is changing the world, right? He's renewing the world. And that's what we all want, right? We all want God to change the world. The world's crazy. It needs change, right? We want God to change it. But God will change the world. But first, he will change you. He will change the world. But first, what he's going to do is to change you. Because a changed you is how God wants to change the world. I was listening to one of my, it's a new podcast that I've been recently listening to, but it's really becoming one of my favorites. It's called Leading Hope Podcast. Check it out if you're a podcast person. Leading Hope Podcast. And on one of the episodes, I already had this sermon, you know, working in my mind and going through. But on one of those episodes, they said something that really, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to write that down and share that. But they shared a quote. It instantly connected with me, and hopefully it does with you this morning. They said this while the people on the podcast were talking. They were quoting someone else. But this is what that quote said. Everything is created twice. Everything is created twice. First in your mind, and then in reality. Then it says, something is first a thought, and then it's an action, and then it's a behavior. I heard that, and I said, oh my, that's the sermon right there. That's the sermon. Everything is created twice, first in our mind, and then in reality. It's first a thought, and then it's an action, and then it becomes a behavior. It becomes who we are called and created to be. It becomes this life that we live, this life of generosity. If we are to be who God created us to be, if we are to impact the world with the generosity of God, God needs to work in our thoughts. And when our thoughts and our minds change, our awareness changes. And when our awareness changes, we see these new opportunities that are all around us to be generous, not limited to money, but to be generous with what? Maybe our time, our attention, with our stuff. With just our influence, to be generous with our love, our grace, our mercy, our forgiveness, all of these opportunities to be generous in these different ways. So I want to challenge you. This is what I want to close with. Are we going to have a closing song? We're going to have a closing song. I'd invite you guys to come forward to lead us in that at this time. But this is the challenge I want you to do this week. I'm going to do it, so we're going to be doing it together. But I want you to say each day this prayer that I shared there at the bottom of your notes. I want you to pray this each day at the start of your day, because I believe through this prayer, through getting to know God, when we know his word, and when we know who he is, we begin to know his heart and his mind, and our hearts and minds become transformed in ways that we just cannot. So I want to challenge you to pray this prayer. God, I want to experience the joy that comes from being generous. I ask that today an opportunity will come my way, that I will recognize it when it does, and that I will have the courage to take action and to give generously. Amen. It's not a long prayer, but I want you to pray that each day at the start of your day. You know, awareness. You know, what would the world look like if we had a renewed awareness? And we'll talk next week about taking action. I know that can be kind of scary too. I'm there with you. Like, oh, I kind of feel like I should say this or do this, or but I'm kind of like a little hesitant. It's okay. But I think it's just because we're out of practice. The more that we do this, it becomes a behavior. It becomes just our life. And you know those people in life, you probably all know one. Those people you're like, that person is awesome. That person is different. A sweet little old lady who I met at Whitehall years ago, Brenda Gould, a retired missionary. Yeah. Just people that have a sweet spirit about them. There's no reason that can't be all of us. There's no reason. That's my prayer for me. That's my prayer for you. That's my prayer for this church. And man, what could Indian Lake look like? Taking little steps as a church. You know, we're doing generous things. But there's opportunities, I believe, all around us. So pray that prayer this week. I just want to close us in prayer, and they'll lead us in a song. God, we